This is your host, Kim. To warn you that somewhere around the end of this episode, our guest, Echo, somehow decided to invite itself onto the podcast, and it didn't want to go away. I'm not sure why it didn't want to go away. Oh, no. Sometimes technology is... forget the excuses. Here's your damn podcast. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Newborn Libertarian. This is your host, Kim, and finally...
Christian.
Oh,
I'm back.
Wow, premature, like crazy on that one. Well, you heard Christian, he is back, and it's nice to have you back. How have you been?
Oh, I've been nice. Been busy, went to a FEE feed seminar down in Austin, Texas. If any of you guys are listening that I met you guys down there, it's great to meet you. Thanks for listening, and we're going to... Hopefully you'll tune in again and again and again. We got a good episode for you today.
Yes, we have somebody that I've been waiting to get on. She's been super busy, so finally she can grace us with her presence. We have Karen on, and she's pretty amazeballs right there. I just said balls. That was gross. Sorry. Anyway.
We got Karen.
Hello, how are you doing?
Doing all right. And she, look at her with her Liberty Spice going on there.
I had to put those on.
That's great. So, Karen, if you can go ahead and introduce yourself so that everybody can hear you, since I need to stop talking.
Well, my name is Karen Ann Harlos, and I am the communications director of the Libertarian Party of Colorado and recently elected Regional 1 representative to the Libertarian National Committee.
Right on. And I'm very proud of that. I was actually at the convention with her. And she gave a really great speech. If I can find that, I'll have to upload that somewhere, because I thought that was a really awesome speech. And one of the questions I always ask somebody who hasn't been on the show before, if unless you just were always a libertarian, were you possibly a Republican, Democrat, or just had no political affiliation before you became a libertarian? Just give us your political leanings and all that before you're a libertarian.
Well, sure. Actually, I was going to mess with you and go back to the day I was born and tell you all of my views ever since then, but no, I think I'll skip that. I was actually, in my youth, teenager, was a Democrat, very liberal, converted to Christianity and went through a very fundamentalist stage. And during that period of time, if you were a Christian, you were a Republican, so I switched my voter's registration to Republican, then became just pretty much disillusioned with the whole thing. And took great joy in having a trash can next to my mailbox so that anytime any voter thing came in, I could just immediately trash it. And that just gave me great pleasure. And then I became a libertarian. And actually, I'm finding it somewhat different than the way it happened with other people. Of course, you know, everyone will say, oh, I look back and I realize I had libertarian leanings, but as far as actually switching over, it was something that took place over the course of literally 15 minutes. I found myself in Facebook discussions with conservative friends who would bring up issues, and the one in particular was this article out there about how they were putting spikes underneath overpass bridges to keep homeless people from sleeping there. And I was arguing against that, and my conservative friends were calling me a liberal. And of course, you know, that horrified me. There's no way that could be. And I just, you know, I pulled out an ass fact, you know, those facts you just pull out of your ass, and said, well, actually, I'm probably a little bit more of a libertarian. And I realized that I really had no idea what that word meant. And I was just saying that so I'd sound smart in a Facebook discussion. So I went and looked it up and went to the LP.org site, read the platform, and it was very much a come to Jesus moment. I just could not believe what I was reading. Like, everything made sense, more sense than most things that I had read. And on the spot, I switched my voter's registration. The next tab I opened up, as I switched over to LP, my husband came home from lunch break. I said, oh, by the way, I just changed my party registration. I was like completely apolitical before, so he had no idea where that came from. And yeah, and then everything else happened, and I have no life now.
Wow. I think I like her story better than mine. I was like, oh, well, you know, I was gay, so you had to be a Democrat. Yay!
So, I get it. You know, I was at a Calvary Chapel church. You had to be a Republican.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, that's kind of a unique transformation. How long ago did you become a libertarian?
September 17th, 2014.
That's pretty recent, and you're pretty high up there in the LP now, so I think that's really interesting. Could you kind of let us know what some of your responsibilities are in the LP? What kinds of things do you do, organizing, outreach? Kind of fill the listeners in.
Oh my goodness, how much time do you have? I professionally, just so that you know, I'm a paralegal, and that's a very high intensive job, so I work quite a bit of hours with the job that actually pays money, unlike all my LP stuff, which doesn't pay any money. And I probably spend now 25 to 30 hours a week volunteering in addition to my full-time job. So for my responsibilities, I do a lot of work with the LP of Colorado. So I handle their Facebook page, I field volunteer requests, I help staff outreach boosts. I mean, if you've been on a state party board, you know the duties are just extraordinarily diverse. I also volunteer with the national Facebook page, so I do 4 or 5 posts a day there. I help mentor other state affiliate pages to grow their Facebook page. I'm the de facto owner right now of that very large community group, LP USA, on Facebook. I'm an editor at Independent Political Report, and now with just recently elected regional representative, I will be advocating for the interests of the 9 states in my region on the LNC. So, and there will, in addition to that, be the typical responsibilities of the LNC, which a lot of people think there's a lot of, you know, snaz and glory to it, but basically it's running a business. Running a party is running a business. As Nick Starwork explained it to me before, when I was even thinking about running, it's like everyone, you know, wants to do all the sexy stuff, you know, working on the ideology. But basically, LNC work is 95% running a business and 5% ideology. And if you want a place at the table for the 5%, you've got to be willing to put in the other 95%. And let's see, what else? So I'm on the Advertising Publication and Review Committee. And that's it off the top of my head right now, but I'm sure I could come up with about 10 other things that I'm doing. It's basically, if I'm not working, it's all LP all the time.
You know what I find the most interesting, Christian? Sorry to interrupt. Is that both of you existed to see my entire libertarian transformation, which is interesting. Like, you guys, like, of course, Christian being my mentor the entire time, and love how patient Karen was the entire time as I was going through my minarchist phase. That was great. But it's interesting to have both of you on the podcast to have seen my entire transformation from day one of becoming a libertarian all the way into the 6 months, as they call it. You know, the difference between being a libertarian and an anarchist is 6 months, and then I hit that mark, and both of you being extremely patient. And Karen is probably one of the nicest anarchists I've ever met, and of course Christian is super nice. Where, you know, I would say things and use the usual arguments, and you guys were just super patient and kind about that sort of thing, where some people were not. And so, yeah, I guess that was my nerd moment of having you guys both on and to tell people there are some really nice anarchists out there, so stop bashing them.
Yeah, we're not all terrible, or at least not all the time.
Kim's political reassignment operation went along without a hitch.
So. Anyway.
It took me 10 months. So if it really did only take you 6 months, then that's really good. It took me nearly precisely 10 months.
Well, I have a good mentor in Christian, so.
Oh, I forgot something, by the way. I told you I'd come up with other things. I can't believe I forgot this. Now all my cohorts are going to be very, very angry with me. I'm also on the board of directors and very active with the Libertarian Party Radical Caucus, which you would have seen being very active at convention. And that actually was a lot of majority of my time is spent right now, so I can't believe I admitted it from the
wow.
List. I'm going to be tarred and feathered, I think, now.
I'm not editing that out to save you either.
Karen, you did cast a vote at the convention, correct? Or I guess two votes.
Two votes? You talking about for the beauty contest?
Yeah, no, for the presidential nomination.
Well, yeah, the beauty contest. yes, I did vote on that. I voted for Daryl Perry on both ballots. So, and on the vice presidential was Will Coley and then Sharp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Perry was probably going to be closer to my platform. I'm also, you know, the nice anarchist guy. But I do understand we're gonna settle this once and for all, because I was also a member of the Austin Peterson for President Facebook page, and there was a whole lot of back and forth that I didn't really see anything wrong with it. It seemed like a lot of people were, you know, trying to overblow it. I know you probably don't have any problems with Austin or whatever, and I know that you probably share some of the concerns with I did, like that drunk guy in the hall yelling "Anyone but Scary Gary." but can you kind of explain some of the inner workings or any of the backroom stuff, or is that something that we're not allowed to talk about?
The backroom stuff with
I don't know. Let your imagination go to work.
Well,
gossip for me.
I didn't work on any campaigns, so I don't have any juicy secrets as far as backroom stuff. I worked, you know, advocating the caucus issues. And it's funny that you do bring up Austin Peterson. I'm supposed to be coming on his show maybe in a couple weeks. The battles between he and I apparently are now the stuff of LP legends, probably be comic written about them. And we'll see how that goes. At the convention, actually, Austin came and found me and apologized to me personally. And my personal position always is, if someone's willing to apologize, then I'm willing to go, you know, to enter it, then it's done. If you've apologized, you admitted something was, you know, incorrect, and we'll move on from there. So I'm hoping that we'll have a very productive discussion after convention. I shot him a message. I said, "Hey, I would love to talk to you on the phone," and we talked for a little while. Was it this weekend? And time's just blurring very recently. So I'm hoping that will all be behind us and that there can be some unity there.
I think there will be. I think Austin kind of, he's got a little bit of a reputation for coming hard against the anarchists or whatever, but, you know, I don't know if you listened to him on Dave Smith's Part of the Problem show, where he was talking about what his ideal society is, and we're so far away from all of our ideal societies, but if his ideal minarchist state is a night watchman state funded by a lottery, is it really any different than the anarchist state that we look for? So to me, he seems like he's really trying to do a good job of bringing them together, and I look forward to see what he's doing in the future. But I'm also curious to hear what your thoughts are, because I'm really excited about 2020 with Adam Kokesh. Is there a lot of excitement going on in the Radical Caucus with him?
Well, yes, actually there is, but he's not running as a libertarian. So, you know, that's an issue there. I'm shamelessly a party person, and I get a lot of criticism for that, but I make no bones about it. I'm a party person. So if Adam were to be running as an independent, that would pose a problem for me. So I hope to be, that all of us in the caucus and myself, I hope to be able to speak with him personally to try to convince him that perhaps running under the Libertarian Party ticket would be a, you know, a better option. And if he did that, I would be absolutely behind him. I'd be like, I'd be tickled even pinker than I am.
Nice. Well, I didn't even know that he was not going to be running as a Libertarian. So that's strange.
I think once the fervor of running meets the brick wall reality of ballot access, I think the Libertarian Party will start to look a whole lot more attractive.
I mean, it's either that or he's going to have to decide if he wants to be Republican or Democrat. And that's not exactly where I want to be. So
I do think that could be very, very exciting. Yes, indeed, I do.
Another thing that I heard now, because both of you guys were at the convention, I heard that the beauty contest, the presidential nomination, went by in two ballots. It went relatively, I guess, as most people kind of expected it to go. But I heard that the VP balloting and nomination, I heard that was quite the sight to behold or to be a part of.
Oh, no, it was the chair. That was the chair.
Oh, was it the chair? Was it the chair nomination that was the crazy... I forget who it was. Maybe it was Johnny Rocket or someone talking about how he was running up and down the floor and screaming and yelling. If I was there, I would think that'd be great fun to be a part of and just to listen to. But on the other hand, I feel like there is there might be a lot of work to do within the convention, kind of putting on a little bit more of a professional face. And I'm not talking about Karen with her pink hair and her spikes, you know, because Karen got up and gave a speech and sounded really well. But when I'm listening on C-SPAN and I'm here and I hear over my speaker that we need to nominate Dobby as our
say
the free elf. You know, that's just kind of the thing that, you know, even if it's funny and, you know, I would laugh at over a couple beers, I'm like, there are old people watching this who might not jump on our ticket. Do you think there's, I don't know how to say it, maybe a focus on putting on more of a kind of professional face on that kind of stuff?
I was there, and I hear this type of criticism a lot, and this type of discussion goes back and forth a lot in the Jason Stapleton group, and I actually don't see that problem, and I argue against this quite a bit. We're libertarians. We're nonconformists. We're individualists. And if that isn't reflected in our convention, then we're doing something wrong. If we wanted to, sometimes it just seems so like self-obvious that I don't even have words to explain it. But I think if we're trying to put the libertarian square peg in a round hole, it's just never going to work. It was actually a lot tamer than I expected going in. I expected it to be a lot more raucous than it was. Political happenings tend to be that way anyway. And any small, you know, disturbances in the force that occurred, I think have been greatly blown out of proportion. I thought it was handled extraordinarily professionally, and I credit a lot of that to Chair Nick Sarwark. He handled that group masterfully. I'm so glad he was reelected.
Yeah, he seemed to do a really good job kind of leading the proceedings going on. I mean, if you had to ask me, I guess pick Sage and not Dobby.
Well, you see, I know the part of the proceedings you're talking about, there was a little bit of, you know, there was a lot of, what do you put it, generous expanding of the boundaries of the appropriate use of points of information and points of personal privilege, which is when those things were happening. People would come up to the mic and, you know, say something that might be a little bit, you know, not really within the scope of Robert's Rules of Order. And that's when stuff like that happened. But that's also when some of the classic moments happened, such as when the gentleman got up and said, "Mr. Chairman, I have a, you know, request for information. Is taxation theft?" And, you know, Nick Sarwark said, "Taxation is theft." I mean, you try to micromanage that stuff and you'll miss the charm as well. Central planning doesn't work for government, and it's not going to work for a libertarian convention either. You have to let libertarians be libertarians. So a line I use a lot in the Jason Stapleton group is I think we engage in a lot of very like self-flagellatory, navel-gazing angst about how we're appearing. And I do not find that particularly productive. When I say we need better messaging, I'm not talking about not having Star Child wear a clear raincoat. That's not what I mean by better messaging. When I say we need better messaging, is we need to produce videos that don't look like they were produced on someone's, you know, first generation iPhone or, you know, on a Betamax camcorder. That's what I mean. We need more professional production, you know, better graphics, maybe a little bit more marketing skills, but I never intended to mean that we need to be anything, you know, any less the quirky, wonderful bunch that we are.
I think that's great, because to most people, our views are already way outside the norm, that it doesn't matter what kind of face we put on anyway. Maybe something is going to get on TV and it's going to stick with someone, and they'll research the party a little bit more, and they'll, you know, look at the platform on the internet like you did and kind of fall into it. But then I was also wondering, oh man, I lost my train of thought. Kim, do you have anything? Oh, she's gone. Okay.
Still here. Sorry, I'm still here. My bad. But
it sounded like she was hacking up a lung over there.
Yeah, sorry, I was coughing and I was trying to save the audience from hearing me hack up for a second. Now, I'm kind of with you there, Karen, because the things that I was defending, I wasn't really concerned about Star Child or anything like that. You know, it's just like, come on, libertarians. Like, come on. I'm not really all that concerned about that. I mean, if people want to come in a suit, that's fine. If people want to, you know, I'm not really concerned about that sort of thing. And of course, there's going to be some difference. I think I didn't really want to be all that mean with what I was going to say, but a lot of the criticisms usually come from the more conservative side. The people that come from the conservative side of things tend to want it to be more professional. It's like, this is, we're not Republicans, not saying anything against Republicans, of course. But, you know, there's a difference. I mean, libertarians are a different breed of human being. We're a little more free with sorts of things. And of course, we're not going to be a circus, but I think there just needs to be, there's just something inviting about the Libertarian Party that I think is something more expressive. And I just think we shouldn't be this buttoned down, straight laced, boring group of people. Like, I would not want to watch that convention on TV. That is super boring.
And to be honest with you, the people that are pointing to those things and using that as an excuse, they're looking for an excuse. It isn't as if the same ideas presented in a $10,000 suit with very polished shoes are going to convince them. Yes, there is a line where some, you know, it's difficult to paint that line. I mean, wearing a nice fitting suit and looking like you've taken a bath in the past week is a bonus. Mm. But I think we go way too far with some of the, where we just think, you know, we're doing the Sally Fields. If we just put on the right dress, they'd like us. They'd really, really like us. And that's not really the way it works. And I think sometimes we worry too much that we're scaring the soccer moms in Peoria. But the fact is, our ideas are radical. The Libertarian Party was founded as a revolutionary party, peaceful revolutionary, but a revolutionary party. If we're not going to embrace that, there are much more effective ways of doing libertarian light. If utter respectability and certain traditional metrics of success are your thing, you would have much more success trying to revive the Tea Party.
Yeah.
You'd have a major party vehicle that could actually win right now. I haven't been that involved in the Democratic Party in my more adult life, but I'm sure there's a liberty wing of that too, where you would have more luck pushing the more libertarian social issues there if that is your only metric. And some of these things I hear coming from these groups that are so concerned about the LP are trying to make the LP into something it's not.
Mm-hmm.
With the way our system is now, I love David Nolan's article on his reasons for a Libertarian Party. And ironically, a lot of people do not like hearing this, and I would recommend anyone look at this article. He has like a list of 8 reasons why we should have a Libertarian Party. And guess where actually winning elections was placed on that list? It was at the bottom, and he put it in, oh, we might actually elect some libertarians along the way. That wasn't the major focus. When you make winning the goal at all costs, then you've lost sight, really, of our whole purpose for existence, in my opinion. I know this is a debate within the party, but we have achieved a lot of success, or been a part of a lot of success, without having major elected officials, i.e. I credit the Libertarian Party and just the general libertarian movement with the huge advances within one generation in gay rights and in women's rights and in pot legalization, and I think it's going to go even further to other drug legalization. I think sometimes we need to expand our metric of what success may be, and I get concerned that sometimes we're willing to sell certain big chunks of our philosophy down the river in order to win. And I'm going to now pull in one of my Christian references, because I still am a Christian, I'm just not a fundamentalist anymore. And a reference I like to use is, you know, what profit is a man if you gain the world but lose your soul? What profit is it going to be to the Libertarian Party if we gain such and such metric of success, but we're not really libertarians anymore?
Yeah, there's... Okay. Sorry, Christian, go ahead.
Oh, I thought that was really good, and I know you cast your vote for Daryl Perry, and if I was there, I probably would have too, at least in the first time. There is some discussion, though, that I agree with you. The reason we need the Libertarian Party is so that we can get a message out there and to spread the message to as many people as possible. Personally, I don't think Gary Johnson was the best choice to spread that message. I'm sure there are a lot of people who would agree with me, but you know, I might just go ahead and use him. And if someone asked me if I voted, I said, well, yeah, I voted for the Libertarian this time, just to do my part to help, you know, spread the message a little bit. And then there's the whole thing about, you know, the Bill Weld thing, the VP choice, and selling your soul for a few extra ratings. But can you kind of give us an insight into the LP? How is Gary's marketing campaign going? I know in a state like Colorado, go Broncos, where you're at, you guys have had great success with pot legalization. I know you still have a little bit ways to go as far as letting the businesses actually put their money in the bank. That's kind of a big loophole. But have you seen an uptick in interest from Gary Johnson? Because at this point, you know, Bernie's basically done, and Hillary's going to get the nod. She's a war criminal, and nobody really likes Trump. So what are you seeing kind of in Colorado and then nationwide with the LP? How are people responding to Gary?
I think he's been getting a tremendously positive response, and I think he will do extraordinarily well in the election. I actually do think we are going to get something very positive out of this. In Colorado, we just did an outreach booth last week, and a ton of people came up asking us about Gary. So far, so good, and obviously we're just waiting. They're gearing up now. I mean, he just got the nomination, and at least here in Colorado, we're going to be going full bore, you know, in support of Gary. And nationwide, I think the polls are even showing it. Of course, you know, the argument could be made that they're not really voting in these polls for Gary, that you could put Mickey Mouse on it, and he would be polling just as high. But I don't know. He's got name recognition, and, you know, Gary has a certain... Some people don't agree with me on this, but Gary has a certain winsome charm about him. I've always just thought he was just the most adorable person. I love watching him on videos, even when I don't agree with what he's saying. And I think that charm is going to win over some voters, because of the two candidates we're going to have now, certainly one word you would not use to describe either of those two is charming.
Oh, no, of course not. Now, I know Gary's big thing this election cycle was actually getting into the debates. Is it looking like, I saw one poll that put him at 16%, which would be enough to get into one of them. Is he getting close to achieving that goal, do you think?
I'm going to plead a little bit of ignorance here, because I haven't followed that lawsuit as closely as I should, oddly enough, considering that I'm a paralegal. You know, those things can drag on. I don't know the current legal status of it, and I just tend to think the power brokers will drag it on and stall it so that it isn't relevant for this election. I hope that doesn't happen. As far as whether he'd achieve it in the polls, it's in certain select polls, and I do not know off the top of my head, I'll never say I know something when I don't, whether what his numbers are in those particular polls. Because, you know, particularly now, we saw in the pre-nomination, the polling sometimes is only as good. Some of them are worthless. I mean, we saw some of the pre-nomination polls with it. I wouldn't even vote in them anymore. They were so worthless. So I haven't investigated enough in these polls to know, other than that people obviously are some accounts. But that would be somewhat ironically fantastic if the Commission on Presidential Debates stalled this in order to try to make it not relevant, and he gets in anyway through their, you know, through their very that would be quite delicious if that happened. And I think it's actually possible. I don't think we could have a more dislikable choice out of the two old parties. So Gary might just get in there without winning the lawsuit, and then win the lawsuit and go take that too.
Yeah, it's good to have someone so knowledgeable about the LP on. And I think the LP is just one of many fronts that we have to confront the state, whether it be actually winning elections or getting a message out there. One of the big reasons why I think the LP matters is I think it can help get some more local people into office How much success are you having in Colorado doing stuff like that, getting local nominees in there?
Well, we've got, it's either 31 or 32 candidates right now, but we have several that are very, very good, and one you've probably heard of, and Austin Peterson has now, he's committed to help supporting her, and he endorsed her as Lily Tang Williams.
Oh,
and
yes.
She's a little spitfire, and she's doing fantastic. I have very high hopes for her, and people say you're delusional if you think an LP candidate can win, but I actually think Lily can win. I'm very excited about Lily. She's our former chair.
Oh, we're actually going to have her on some point in the future. I'm still working that out. I met her at the convention. We talked for a while, so she's going to be on this podcast at some point. And if you happen to be available at that point in time, you can be part of that episode if you would like, because we happen to often like to have people that have been a guest on the show come on to co-host too, because that's just how I roll on this podcast.
That would be great. Thank you.
And
I have to recaffeinate a little bit here.
But I wanted to go to one of the earlier points that the LP, even though they decided to get Gary and Weld in there, which I definitely did not vote for either one of them. Let's go ahead and put that out there. Now, everybody's like, yes, we want to go ahead and win, but I feel like the LP, as Karen was saying, has been doing a lot for Liberty, and I think we kind of shortchanged ourselves with trying to get impatient, because what I was seeing, especially in my community, and this is probably something that, was specific to me, but I could see the LP being of good use, and I think they were short-sighted in seeing this, and I feel like John McAfee was trying to say it, but he said it terribly after when he had to give his whole concession speech, and he, I don't know if you heard it, Christian, but he basically was looking at the room and saying, basically there's a bunch of white people, and shame on us, the LP, because there wasn't enough diversity in the LP. Like, literally, the whole weekend, I think there might have been three of us, like, three black people, possibly. I don't know.
Man, if you would have just been in the room, you would have had the entire diversity aspect covered.
I know, I'm like, look, I was like, black, lesbian, woo! But like, the point he was making, like, he made it not, it wasn't so great how he delivered it, but, in defeat, you're not exactly all that excited. But what I'm seeing is, in my district as I run, and when I was still a Democrat, what they tell you is that, of course, you don't want to be a Republican because they tell you Republicans are bigots and they don't, especially don't like gay people. And so the only party you think you could be in is the Democrats, because you won't be a Republican. So I felt like the Libertarians just sold themselves short. It's like, we need to run and we need to win. So let's go nominate two old white people. I'm not, obviously don't have anything against white people or old white people, but I was like, now that you can have more diversity, you got Lily Tang Williams in there running. I'm like, we could be really taken off, and finally all of the people that are minorities that are told that they need to be Democrats are finding out that they have a different option. And it's when in my district I talk to minorities and they're like, you mean we don't have to choose to be a Democrat? Like, there's freedom in another party and nobody's been telling me. Like, even after my C-SPAN speech, somebody actually contacted me on my election page and said, why didn't we know you guys had candidates? Like, and I had to tell her, I was like, well, of course the two parties are gonna try to shut us out everywhere. People are finding out, and minorities are finding out, and we were so ready to sell out and be pragmatic and sell out ourselves and our entire party to win now, when minorities like are finally finding out there's another party that is more free, and that's not pandering to them and trying to like force stuff on them. And then I'm like, we're about to find a whole group of people that could be coming into this party, and I feel like we sold ourselves short, and there's a whole entire community of people, minorities, that we could be focusing on, and we're not. I mean, and I feel like John McAfee was kind of making that point, or maybe he wasn't, but we're so ready to think about winning that we just miss an entire segment of people, and that should have been our focus, is to bring them in before we should have thought of winning, because we could have strengthened our numbers, and now all these minorities are still thinking they're going to have to be Democrats to get anywhere. Rant over.
Yeah, and I think think we could do that in some of the down ticket races. Again, as you pointed out, with Lily being a great example. But you know, I like pointing out to groups of people who try to say that, you know, it's the old straight white men club, that, you know, take a look at our first ticket. We had an openly gay man, and we had the first woman to receive an electoral college vote. So we have been vanguards in that regard. I'm not a big fan of identity politics, so I tend not to look at things that way, and perhaps I'm not the most sympathetic to that. So, you know, I here I am, I'm stumbling over it because I'm just really, really terrible at that topic. I'm not so sure if we, I think Gary, again, I will say a lot, and I said this on the stage when I gave my speech. Gary has a lot of positive class that he will bring to the election, and I think that, and the down-home charm that will, I think, reach different segments. Now, do I hope that we have more diverse tickets in the future? Yes, not for just for diversity's sake, only because I know we have talented people that reflect a more diverse, you know, population. And, you know, I had high hopes that perhaps Sharp would have been the vice presidential.
Oh, yeah, he's awesome.
And I thought that really would have been fantastic for us. But, you know, as a party person, our party chose the ticket it did. And, you know, in my capacity as party representatives, that's who I'm getting behind. And we will, you know, see what we make of this ticket. There are positives and negatives. You know, you go the pragmatic route, and you'll have the purists like me. I'm an absolutely self-professed purist who will be bemoaning that perhaps some statements aren't as libertarian as they can be. But we can get something out of going that way. So let's get everything out of it that we can, and bring these people in and teach them what, you know, what you know, consistent libertarianism is. I'm not one of those who's going to be wailing and gnashing my teeth. I'm looking very positively upon this campaign, and I intend upon working positively for this campaign and building whatever we can for the LP out of it. I'm not going to be negative about it. Mm-hmm. There's certain position statements that our candidates have made that I don't like, but frankly, unless it was, I think it might even been on one of your shows, actually, that the only candidate you'll ever agree 100% with is yourself. So unless you're running, you're probably going to disagree on some things. Though I don't really, I'm trying to think of anything I disagreed with Daryl on. There might not have been anything. But running, let's pretend Daryl got the nomination, then there would be certain opportunities we would have lost with that and gained in other areas. So I'm more of the glass is half full type person, and we're going to make the best of what we can get at for the Libertarian Party out of it. Again, my shameless party person persona is coming through here. I'm not about candidates. I never have been. Mm-hmm. I'm about building the Liberty Movement. I think the Libertarian Party is a great vehicle to do that, and that's where my loyalty lies. There'll be good candidates come and go, bad candidates come and go, and my interest is in building the party no matter what candidates we have. And the choice was made by properly credentialed delegates at convention.
Mm-hmm. And just for clarification, I'm not all that in for identity politics either. It's just, you know, outside of the party, it does actually, it's unfortunately a factor. But to libertarians, not so much. But, you know, I mean, I came from the left, so it does kind of, when you come from the left, it's kind of a thing that's, like, ingrained into your brain. But then when you become a libertarian, it becomes less and less important. And it's just how it is, but, you know, I guess that's why I exist. Just to tell people, yeah, even though I may be a black lesbian, I'm just here to tell you that's not what really matters. Liberty matters, and if you want to fight for liberty, who gives a crap what you look like? Because that's the point of the Libertarian Party, is principles and liberty. And if you don't want that, well, you can come back to the party when you do.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you know me. It's all about the principles. I found the statement of principles. I often joke that I have the statement of principles tattooed on my rear end. That's how much I love it. but I want to have the statement of principles baby.
I was like, oh my goodness, that's going to be the child's name. So, anytime you'd like to start that up again, Christian, go ahead.
So, we just asked a question before Tim's entire system crashed us. I really like to study economics and stuff like that. But Karen, you said you'd like to study party history. What kind of aspects on that? I know Rothbard kind of helped found the Libertarian Party. He was a big actor early on, where it started in a small room with about 12 people, and then eventually, you know, it's kind of grown into what we have today. What are some things about the party history that you like to, or you that makes information you know that the rest of
okay, my peculiar obsession has been the history and the tensions between minarchists and anarchists in the party. And that became my interest when I actually became an anarchist myself and started to become the subject of multiple excommunication attempts, which still happen probably on a monthly basis. So that particular, the way that's been resolved within the party and been held together for the past, you know, four decades has been my particular interest. So I like looking at the early history of the party, particularly at the time around the founding and the Dallas Accord. I find there's a lot of ignorance and mythology, false mythology, that has arisen around that, and that's kind of been my interest. If you don't know anything, do you need me to explain the Dallas Accord? Is this something that would be...
I've heard briefly about it, but most of our listeners have not, so you can go into that for us.
The LP was founded, I mean, everyone knows Nolan, which was primarily, you know, the main co-founder, but the group of people that founded the LP consisted of both minarchists and anarchists. And when I say minarchists, I mean actual minarchists. There's so few actual minarchists today. I would love to have a party full of actual minarchists. But by 1974, the tensions between the two groups had gotten pretty high. And at that particular convention, they came to an agreement amongst themselves that the party platform would basically, let me back up a little. It was an agreement between themselves that they had so much in common and that the difference between them was so small and the getting from here to there so great that they would agree to work together until the point where the anarchists would want to go a little bit further and the minarchists would be perfectly happy with their teeny tiny little stake. So they agreed that they would not take positions on whether the state was ultimately necessary or desirable as an end game. Not in interim steps, but as an end game goal. And at that time, the statement of principles was amended. So I've got to go back to 1972 for a second. When the party was formed, and a lot of the rhetoric you hear today just seems to be very ignorant of this history. When the party was formed, they purposely created the statement of principles, which is in the platform. It's a permanent part of the platform per our bylaws. And the whole purpose of the statement of principles was to basically have a libertarian party creed. It would be the few things that we believe as foundational items. And it was an ideological, pretty much stake pounded in the ground, and the tether to which everything would be tied to. And most people just do not grasp the importance of this. So that was put into the party at its founding in at the first convention in 1972, and it was protected by a 7/8 requirement, meaning that the statement of principles could only be amended by 7/8 of registered delegates at convention. Now, that's almost like, you know, that Dumb and Dumber thing where, you know, Jim Carrey says to her, she's, you know, will I ever be get with you? And she's like, yeah, you know, one in a million chance. And he's like, so you mean I have a chance? And that's like with the 7/8. It's pretty much impossible. Because it's not just 7/8. People got to look at that really carefully. It's 7/8 of registered delegates on the floor. So, you know, Kim being at convention knows that there isn't 7/8 of delegates on the floor at any one time. So it can never happen. It's basically they have said, this is it. This is what we believe. It's impossible to change. Theoretically possible, practically impossible. And not only did they do that, not only did they say that this particular bylaw says the statement of principles can only be amended by 7/8, they made a later bylaw that says the bylaw that says the 7-ACE can only be amended by 7-ACE. So they like double protected it. You know, they put two condoms on. And so that was pretty awesome. So, but they had an escape hatch that said, because that basically is pretty much parliamentary heresy to make a group impossible to change. So they added something in 1972 that says, you guys have 2 years to think about this. In 1974, if you decided, oh my God, we made a terrible mistake, you can amend the Statement of Principles by 3/4, which is, you know, high burden, but one that's not terribly unheard of, and which most constitutions have as their standard for amendment. So after those 2 years in the 1974 convention, when you had the big clash between the minarchists and the anarchists, they in fact did amend the Statement of Principles using that 3/4 thing. And what they did is they didn't weaken it. They actually made it stronger and added two nods to anarchy in the Statement of Principles, thereby permanently making a statement that both minarchists and anarchists are welcome in the party. Now, the legend that has arisen about the Dallas Accord is that it was just a gentleman's agreement that doesn't bind anyone today, and we don't have to care about what people did in 1974, you know, get the hell out of the party, anarchists. But the fact is, it was formalized. I don't care what anyone says. It's a legend that it wasn't. It was formalized in the most permanent way possible by amending the Statement of Principles. And the fact that this has been lost in the midst of our history is really disturbing to me. So that's kind of been my peculiar obsession, is to re-educate people about that very early part of our history. And what's also very interesting about that part is where I said before, I would love to have a party full of actual minarchists. The party founders, the minarchists that were there, now, of course, you know, people can point to some exceptions. I'm talking broadly here. I mean, they were minarchists that actually were very much of the Randian stripe. So their limited government actually, it would be like what Austin Peterson was advocating. It's extremely, extremely limited. If we got to such a limited government, I would find a new hobby. So unfortunately, most minarchists, which we'll see today now, they're advocating for a whole lot more. The very radical underpinnings of the founding of this party, I just find extraordinarily fascinating. And some of the conversations that they had, and if you look at some of the older platforms and some of the older literature. So, yeah, those are my particular areas of study. I am the person who has printed out every single platform that the party has. I have them in a big notebook that I sit and fondle. No, I read. I'm not that freaky deaky. And I've actually printed out every single platform that every state affiliate has produced, and I've went through those, and I've printed out every set of bylaws. Okay, yes, I am, I guess, a bit freaky deaky. And so party governance and party history and party documentation is my particular obsession, I guess you could call it.
Now you're on.
Wow, Christian, you've got like some serious echo.
Okay, you're on Spencer's Rosenblatt. So it seems to me that the excommunications and the purges seem to be kind of a one-way. Always kind of, I'm not trying to make a mess against them kind of thing, but there's room in the party and the movement for minarchists and if you just want to shrink the size of the state, you know, as much as possible. But like, it almost seems
is Karen,
that,
Karen, are you not hearing that, or is that just me? Sorry. There's like some insane echo coming just from me.
Well, the anarchists who really just want us to sit home and complain all day and do nothing. But it seems that when a minarchist complains about a purist, like one physical purist, there always seems to be 10 or so minarchists that are just not even going to consider anything that an anarchist says. And that's just coming from my perspective. And again, if any of you, my feedback, are listening on here, there were no other really anarchists here. So, but I'm not trying to, you know, put them out of the mirror. I'm trying to accept them, you know, just create ideas, because I know at the end of the day that we're all just trying to create things. And, or eliminate it entirely, but I guess I'm getting a lot of echo, so I'll pass this back over to you. Do you have kind of the same kind of experience?
I do, but I wouldn't call it exactly one-sided, because I think us anarchists can be quite obnoxious to the minarchists in the party as well, but I don't think there is the purge mentality, I don't think any of us are under the illusion that we are the anarchist party. So we don't go around trying to throw out the anarchists, though we may make certain statements that they don't particularly care for, judging their levels of purity, I guess is the way to look at it. But I don't understand why that's an insult to begin with. You don't get a special badge in heaven for being the purest of them all. And if you're someone who doesn't think that consistent libertarianism is right, then you're right for not thinking that. I don't know why me saying I don't think so-and-so is consistently libertarian is such an insult. If you're insulted by not being viewed as being a consistent libertarian, then be a consistent libertarian. You obviously think that's an ideal to aspire to, then be it. Maybe absolutely pure libertarianism isn't right. Maybe a mixture of something else. I don't think so, obviously, but I don't see how this has become this utter insult. Now, the actual excommunications, I do find those to be pretty much one-sided. As I said, it happens to me quite frequently where people are pretty much saying to leave. I was at a local LP meeting with a person that's a friend of mine, an absolute friend of mine, so this isn't a hostile relationship, and we discussed views, and he looked me straight in the face and said, get the F out of the party. And I'm like, what? He's like, you need to get the F out of the party. I mean, that's just how blunt it was. And I, at the time, was probably doing more work for the LP in Colorado than anyone else, but I get that quite a bit, and my particular point of view is once you understand what was done in 1974, neither side has any right to throw each other out. We should be calling each other to consistency. I have no problems with anarchists challenging menarchists on the consistency of their views, and I have no problem with menarchists defending the consistency of their views and saying, in trying to prove how actually, as Nozick did, if we haven't read that book, I think that is the book to read to make sure that you actually have a good underpinning for your anarchy. I read that book as I'm speaking of, I go off on these weird rabbit trails, Nozick's book, Anarchy, State, and Utopia, in which he tries to make a case that a state can arise and exist without ever violating the non-aggression principle. I think he fails, but it's a brilliant attempt. And so I have no problem with those kinds of disputes. And I think once you understand what the statement of principles says, it does not give it does not state whether a state ultimately has to exist. But unfortunately, there was a betrayal of that in 2006 with the Portland massacre, when our entire platform was gutted and rewritten. And some people view that with victory. And I find it sad, anyone who views what happened in 2006 as a victory. It was a betrayal of libertarians against libertarians. Now, do I think that our platform probably became too long and bloated and was full of all kinds of weird barnacles? Yes. The answer to it was not to gut the whole thing and put in a platform that technically violates the Dallas Accord. The Dallas Accord, the informal part of it was that our platform would never state whether a state was ultimately desirable. Arguably, our current platform might do that. I argue that it doesn't, because the platform can never be inconsistent with the statement of principles, and the statement of principles doesn't do that. So the only way for me to interpret the platform is being consistent with the SOP. But I think what happened in 2006 is the cause of a lot of our problems today. We could have fixed the platform problems without doing what was done. And it was specifically to try to make the anarchists feel less welcome. There was a certain omissions plank proposal that was put on the floor of this convention that almost passed, which was very heartening to me, and I hope it comes up again. If it had passed, this one change to the platform, and I just don't think people realize the gravity of this, and that's because people aren't as obsessed with the history as I am. If that one plank had passed, the changes, this convention, it could have undid 20 years of animosity and just been such a party unifier, and it almost passed. So, you know, that would have been fantastic.
And just to wrap that one up, now finally know what the heck you guys are talking about, because I am now coming on the side of people trying to purge me, and I'm like, good Lord, this is unfortunate. I used to be on the other side where I didn't exactly want to purge anarchists, but I guess I could see what they were talking about. But now it's just like, today I was involved in a thread where, you know, they were just saying, you know, apparently are we a detriment to the party, and I was just like, why, you know, are we a problem for the party? And they were like, oh, because, you know, they persecute us. And I was like, actually, what I'm seeing in this thread, you're persecuting me right now. So you're kind of doing what you're telling me I'm doing to you. And I see that as hypocritical, but I put it nicely. And I'm like, oh, this is actually awful. Ooh, it's unfortunate. However, there's still some, yeah, I don't know what's, like, Karen's audio is perfect. And for some odd reason, mine and Christian is awful. So I guess that's a sign we probably should start wrapping this one up. But, Karen, thank you for coming on. You have lots of knowledge, so I'm thinking I might have to have you on at some point to talk a little more in depth about platform history and all that.
Oh, that just makes me really excited.
Yeah, so that's got to happen. I think so. And, all right, well, Christian, do you even want to dare to speak?
I'll try.
Nope.
Did it happen again?
Yep.
No, you sound wonderful, at least here.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on with my side of the audio, so now everybody who was saying our audio was getting better is going to be like, what the hell did they do?
Well, I guess the audience is growing because apparently our audio is getting better, so I've heard. I don't know if this podcast will have anything to say about that, but I want to thank all our new listeners, maybe all the listeners that I met at FEE. Hopefully, you guys will listen in again. I'll be out all week again. I'm going to Philadelphia for an IHS seminar for school on liberty and society. I want to encourage anyone who's a college student, go ahead and check out the FEE seminars, any economic seminars you can get into. You'll get connected to a bunch of good libertarian people, some conservatives, a couple black sheep socialists will wander into the thing, and it'll just be fun. You know, as libertarians, we like to argue and debate with each other, so that'll, you guys will all be excited to get to meet that. And I want to thank Karen for coming on. It was a lot of fun to have her, and I learned a lot about the party's history and kind of the inner workings. And she really works hard to reach new people. I've seen some of her pictures on Facebook. She's out there walking the walk in the trenches. So we want to thank Karen for helping liberty, even if it is for the party, and some people may not agree with it, but it's one front that we have to do it. She's doing her part.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. So, do you have any details for us to plug for anybody to where they could find you and read any of your stuff?
Well, Facebook is where you'd find me, and if at all, the idea of the purest, consistent, radical ideas appeal to you, I really would encourage you to, well, there's actually two things I'd encourage people who are in the party to do. And this is what I was told a bit ago, and it's advice I took to heart. You accomplish absolutely nothing by sitting around bitching and moaning on Facebook. If things aren't going necessarily the way you think it should, get out there and do something about it. Get involved. Get involved in your state party. Get involved however you can. I make no bones about it that I would like to see the party move in a more consistent, you know, radical direction. As I like to say, I'm part of the libertarian wing of the Libertarian Party. If that sort of thing intrigues you and you would like to hang out with like-minded people and be part of the activist force that is not just sitting around complaining, you saw us working the convention floor and putting out educational materials and making speeches and being a positive change within the party rather than being a destructive force within the party. Tries to be my message. If I ever felt like I was a destructive force in the party and all I could do was be, you know, negative Nancy about it, I would leave. Trying to make the changes in the way that I'd like to see. So I would encourage people to check out the Libertarian Party Radical Caucus. We would love to have you, and you know, we'll you could take a look at our ideas and see if maybe that kind of activism makes some more sense to you. And I guess that's basically it. Follow me on Facebook. There's some interesting discussions. It's a lot of anarchy. If that's your cup of tea, you'd like it.
All right, and here's to hoping that I'm just hearing the echo in my head and it's not really in the recording. But if you want to check us out, you can hit us up on Twitter at Newborn Liberty. Search us out on Facebook, Newborn Libertarian. And we are also on Google Play, and we're on Stitcher, and of course on iTunes. And if you want to shoot us an email, you can do that in audio form. Just attach a WAV file, MP4, whatever. And you can catch us at Gmail, newbornlibertarian@gmail.com. And until next time, thank you for listening. For Christian, for Karen, this is Kim. Catch you later.